This Family Life News podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you.
It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome aboard. We'll start overseas. A deal may be in the works in the Middle East that could de-escalate tensions between Israel and Iran. Still, says reporter Deborah Patta, when it comes to defense of the Jewish state, Israel's not taking orders from anyone.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has brushed off calls for restraint from Israel's allies as his war cabinet deliberates a response to Iran. They have all kinds of advice, he said, but I want to make it clear we will make our own decisions.
Correspondent Trey Yingst picks up our coverage from Tel Aviv.
Israeli forces remain on high alert across the country, waiting for orders from the country's war cabinet to strike back against Iran. Reports indicate that strikes against the Islamic Republic were called off on two separate occasions over the past several days.
The Biden administration may support military operations in Rafah in exchange for Israel calling off plans to strike Tehran because of last week's missile attack. U.S. warships, meanwhile, remain at the ready in the Mediterranean. Here's correspondent Jennifer Griffin.
The USS Arleigh Burke and USS Kearney remain poised to defend U.S. bases across the region. Iran reportedly has pulled many of its Revolutionary Guard Corps forces out of Syria, fearing Israeli retaliation for Saturday's missile assault.
Last Saturday, Iran launched more than 100 missiles at Israel. All but five were intercepted or failed mid-flight. Anti-Israeli protests raged on the campus of Columbia University last night in New York City.
There is only one solution!
There is only one solution!
Hundreds of pro-Palestinian demonstrators formed a human chain called the Gaza Solidarity Encampment. Jonas Due is editor of the student-run newspaper.
It was very surreal being a student. It really felt like we were in what some people would say, you know, almost a war zone of a campus.
The protests happened as the president of Columbia testified on Capitol Hill about the rise of anti-Semitism.
Anti-Jewish things were said at protests, yes.
Have you seen one against Arabs?
No, I have not.
Have you seen one against Palestinians?
No, I have not.
Columbia student Eden Yadigar told the House committee she doesn't feel safe anymore.
Many Jewish students are too fearful to report incidents of discrimination and harassment that occur both in and out of the classroom because of how little faith they have that the university will take the necessary steps to protect them.
Columbia is under fire for hiring a Hamas sympathizer after the October 7th terrorist attack on Israel. The Ivy League school says that controversial professor no longer works there. The hush money trial of former President Trump continues today in Manhattan. Opening statements could get underway as soon as next week. Attorney Saul Weisenberg.
I think it's going to be difficult for him to get a fair trial in New York because of the overwhelming hostility to Trump by members of the jury pool.
The trial is expected to last a couple of months. Trump must be present in court each day of it. He's accused of falsifying business records to cover up an affair. The former president denies the charges. The U.S. Senate has dismissed impeachment charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We're supposed to have debates on the issues, not impeachments on the issues. We are not supposed to say that when you disagree with someone on policy, then that's suddenly a high crime and misdemeanor.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the case against Mayorkas does not rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt says it does.
You've got Chinese nationals now being caught at military installations, potentially spying on our military. And it's part and parcel of what happens when you have a completely wide open border.
Republicans argue Mayorkas deserves to be ousted from office for the immigration crisis that is happening at our border. A new report report from the Attorney General of Hawaii points the finger of blame at a local mayor there for the fatal fire in Maui that killed more than 100 people last year. Reporter Jonathan Vigliotti has more on the communications breakdown that happened August 8th, 2023.
At 3:15 p.m., as the fire grew in intensity, state officials tried to reach him, asking if he was in the emergency operations center. They were told no. He finally signed the emergency order at 8 p.m., hours after Lahaina burned down.
The fire was caused by fallen electrical wires. Experts predict the 400-page Attorney General report will be the basis for a slew of lawsuits filed by victims' families. Arizona's near-total abortion ban is still on the books. The pro-life measure outlaws the procedure, except to save the life of the mother. Doctors who perform abortions could face up to 5 years in prison. That ban could start being enforced as soon as June. More questions than answers after 911 service was knocked out for several hours in four states. The outage comes as officials warn of increasing cyber attacks that target emergency call centers. Correspondent Aaron McLaughlin.
Overnight in busy Las Vegas, residents couldn't get through to 911 on cell phones or landlines for 2 hours.
The 911 outages hit Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, and Nebraska. Texas police blame a technical glitch by a major cell phone carrier, but nobody knows for sure why emergency calls did not go through in four states last night. Still to come on the Noon Report, cyber attack at the New York State Capitol, proposed tax hike in Corning, and Tesla lays off workers.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams, tracking a few showers that'll be coming our way over the next 36 hours. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin, we'll see you then. Thank you very much. Let's check the stories making news where you live next. New York Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie is throwing cold water on Governor Hochul's state budget victory lap. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Speaker Hastie said that Hochul's announcement that there's a conceptual deal is premature. He said many lawmakers have not been briefed on the details and nothing is set in stone. Hastie said he's still hearing back from Democrats in private meetings and many have questions about the proposed spending plan. The budget was due April 1st and lawmakers have approved five extenders. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
All right, Jeremy, thank you. Capital Tonight's Jack Arpey continues our coverage from Albany.
In an interview with New York One's Inside City Hall, Governor Hochul called what is left to be finalized, quote, minor details and inside baseball. Insisting that what is seen in a final deal will be the same as what was announced on Monday.
The last two budgets, we did it the exact same way. The night before, I'd had one of my many, many, many meetings with the two leaders. I said, is this the handshake? And yes, this is the handshake.
Senate Republicans railed against the lack of a concrete deal.
Here we are in Planet Albany with a budget that's 17 days late.
State Senator Tom O'Mara of Big Flats. The state capitol was also hit by a cyber attack yesterday. Just as lawmakers were rushing to finalize spending bills, the system that drafts those bills was down most of Wednesday. It's not clear who launched the attack or what data might have been compromised. Computer chip maker Micron has just landed $6 billion in federal funding to help it set up shop in central New York. That massive project near Syracuse is the largest investment ever in the Empire State into a private company. Casey Bortnick with Spectrum News.
Now the money is meant to help Micron kickstart its $100 billion chip fabrication build in the town of Clay, a project that's expected to create 50,000 jobs and reinvent upstate New York as an epicenter for the global semiconductor industry.
The Micron facility will take 20 years to complete. Its gargantuan site covers an area the size of four football fields near the thruway north of Syracuse. Tesla is laying off nearly 300 workers at its plant in Buffalo. State Senator Sean Ryan.
You know, I can't emphasize enough the great hopes that we had for this company, but by and large,
large. They've been a very difficult company to work with.
The news comes as the Elon Musk-owned company announces it's cutting its global workforce by 10%. Those layoffs in Buffalo are expected to begin in July. The Corning Painted Post School District in New York's Southern Tier is asking residents to pay more in taxes to avoid about a dozen teacher layoffs, about 5% more in taxes than last year. That $139 million budget proposal will be voted on May 21st. It represents a more than 6% increase in spending from last year. Corning has about 900 teachers and staff that serve over 4,400 students in nine school buildings. Three construction workers were killed in a crash on Interstate 83 in York County, Pennsylvania yesterday. A 24-year-old driver of a large box truck hit a construction vehicle in an active work zone. State Transportation Secretary Mike Carroll says accidents like these are all too commonplace.
There were 1,200 crashes in Pennsylvania work zones last year. Those crashes, sadly, took the lives of 22 people. We want that number to be zero.
Yesterday's deadly collision on I-83 caused the truck to swerve onto the shoulder where those workers were. All three died at the scene. In Albany, New York, police officer continues his recovery in the hospital after being shot during a traffic stop early Wednesday. The suspect was killed in what authorities call an ambush. The mayor of Albany is Kathy Sheehan.
I hope in people's minds understand the danger that our police officers put themselves in every day.
The shooting comes just days after a Syracuse cop and sheriff's deputy were both killed in the line of duty while investigating a stolen vehicle at a home in Salina. Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey hitting the road as polls show him locked in a tight race with Republican businessman Dave McCormick in the November election. This could be one of the most closely watched U.S. Senate contests in the country this fall. Casey has 20 campaign stops between now and next Tuesday, which is primary day. He's seeking a fourth term. McCormick lost the GOP primary to Dr. Mehmet Oz in 2022. He was defeated by the current junior U.S. Senator John Fetterman. The man who admitted to kidnapping a 9-year-old girl on a camping trip last year will spend the rest of his life behind bars. Craig Ross was sentenced Wednesday.
You probably thought it was going to be easy to get away with. Look at me. Does it feel easy now? You picked the wrong kid this time.
The victim's family addressed the child predator in court.
I don't understand why people like you do the things you do. You took something from my daughter that cannot be replaced, and I will never forgive you for that.
The girl's uncle told Ross.
Well, yes, you did receive a life sentence. So did she. But the difference between the two of you is that she will turn this into power and help people while you're rotting in a cage.
The 9-year-old disappeared on September 30th, 2023. She was found 3 days later in a closet in a trailer belonging to the kidnapper's mother. A boil water advisory in effect for all residents in the Chautauqua County, New York communities of Fredonia and Pomfret. It's all because of harmful microbes at the water treatment plant. No word yet on how long that boil water advisory will last. The Lollipop Farm in Western New York needs your help in caring for over 100 rescued dogs. The animals were seized from a home in Rochester.
Most of the house was full of feces, dogs that were severely matted and or very dirty. So we, at that point, decided we were going to remove all those animals.
Reno DiDomenico with the Humane Society of Greater Rochester. Those dogs range in age from puppies to adults, and all are in need of medical care. A central Pennsylvania school bus company is helping kids pass the time during their daily ride. Here's Family Life's Brian Querry.
Miller Motor Company, which provides school bus services to Richland, Forest Hills, and Winbur area schools, is now offering a selection of books for students to enjoy during their ride to and from school. Glenn Gay, Winbur's Director of Education, described the program as a proactive approach to student literacy and a wonderful idea. The initiative is also a benefit to bus operations, as many drivers say it is encouraging safe and quiet behavior on the bus. Roughly 500 age-appropriate stories have been donated, and students are welcome to take the books home to continue reading what they pick out. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
Love it. Thank you, Brian. Hey, sports is next. It's the 2-Minute Drill on Family Life.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the NBA's play-in tournament saw the 76ers lock up the 7th seed in the East after Philly edged Miami 105-104. The Sixers had to do it in come-from-behind fashion. Down 51-39 at the half, Philadelphia put the pedal to the metal in the second half. Joel Embiid scored 11 of his 23 points in the fourth quarter. Nicholas Batum knocked down 5 of his 6 three-pointers in the second half. The 76ers now get to play the Knicks on Saturday in the first round of the NBA playoffs. The Bulls beat the Hawks 131-116. They will face the Heat for the final playoff spot in the East. That game will be tomorrow night. Stanley Cup playoffs begin on Saturday. Last night, the Islanders edged the Penguins in the season finale 5-4. Baseball. The Yankees salvaged their series finale against the Blue Jays 6-4. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton both hit home runs to help lift the Bronx Bombers to the win. The Orioles doubled up Minnesota 4-2. Texas edged Detroit 5-4. The Royals and White Sox split a pair 4-2 KC and 2-1 Chicago. The Red Sox shut down Cleveland 2-0 and the Angels 5-4 winners over the Rays. In the National League, the Mets crushed the Pirates 9-1 to complete a three-game sweep. Harrison Bader and Starling Marte both hit two-run home runs. The Phillies held on for a 7-6 win and a sweep over the Rockies. Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner both did yard work in the first inning. The Nats shut out the Dodgers 2-0. The Cubs, Brewers, and Giants also picked up wins. And in interleague action, the Braves, A's, and Mariners won their games. That is a look at sports.
Thank you, Randy Mann. Still to come on the Noon Report, Columbia University in the crosshairs, impeachment articles dismissed, and Trump trial back in action.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone-Street. When most Christians hear the word creation, what comes to mind are concerns about the age of the earth and the important battles between intelligent design and naturalistic evolution. In these instances, considerations of creation are primarily focused on how the world was made. Now, those questions are incredibly important, but there's also other things that Christians must consider, especially in a culture like ours. Namely, we have to wrestle with what it means that God created the world, why He created the world, and the implications from both. Another way to think about it is Christians need to be really clear on what creation is for and what our place is in it. It's tempting to see the biblical story of creation as kind of God's plan A, something that was quickly discarded on account of human sin. In this view, Christ's work to redeem the world and the work of the church are just considered kind of backup plans. And in this view, the Christian life is often reduced to just personal salvation, and the world around us is reduced to a kind of ticking time bomb that's just waiting to be destroyed. This, however, is not consistent with the deep hope that the gospel offers. According to author and theologian Edward Clink, God's purposes have not changed since creation. In his new book, The Beginning and End of All Things, Clink argues, and I quote here, "The goal of every Christian is not a departure to an otherworldly heaven somewhere in the clouds, but a coming down of heaven to earth and the renewal of all creation." To get a better picture of God's eternal purpose for His people, we have to go back to the beginning, back to creation, not just how He created the world, but that He created the world and why. As Clink shows, that's exactly what Genesis describes, that God created the world and the implications of a creator and, of course, the place of humanity, God's image bearers, within the creation. He then traces God's purposes for the world throughout the entirety of Scripture. He shows how the Bible's unified picture of God's work pulls together creation and redemption. Here's Clink, quote, "As the biblical story leaves the Old Testament and enters the New, the purposes of God's creation project are made manifest in the person and work of Jesus Christ. What God began in the Garden of Eden in Genesis and God's perfect providence had always been intended to be filled by Jesus, who is the true gardener in the Garden of Easter. From Genesis to Revelation, God's goals for creation have always been the same, that His world, and especially His image bearers, would dwell in unbroken fellowship with Him. Another way to say it is what was true about God's plans for His creation in the beginning remains true today. The redemption of the world through Christ and his church isn't a new idea. It's simply the fulfillment of God's original plan. God's redeeming work does not scrap creation. It restores and renews it. And remember that it's not only God's people who are longing for the return of Christ, it's the creation itself, according to Romans 8. So in Christ, Christians are called to participate in this renewal of creation as God's representatives. I'm confident that Edward Clink's book, The Beginning and End of All Things, will help connect your theological understanding of the relationship between creation and redemption. That's why this month we're giving away copies of this book with a gift of any amount to the Colson Center. To make your gift and to claim your copy, please visit colsoncenter.org/April. That's colsoncenter.org/April. Today's Breakpoint was co-authored by Jared Hayden. And for more resources to live like a Christian today, go to breakpoint.org.
All right, John, thank you. Time to take it outside. Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Clouds, some sunny breaks, and a shower here and there. High temperatures, mid-50s to the mid-60s. Tonight, some patchy clouds, low temps, 40s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, showers return during the day. High temperatures, mid-50s to mid-60s. Cooler Saturday, clouds, some sunshine, a light shower, and high temperatures, mostly in the 50s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. This is the Noon Report. It's Thursday, April 18th. Anti-Semitism at Columbia University. The focus of a contentious hearing on Capitol Hill. New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik led the charge against the Ivy League school.
Despite claims otherwise, Columbia's leadership refuses to enforce their own policies and condemn Jewish hatred on campus, creating a breeding ground for anti-Semitism and a hotbed of support for terrorism from radical faculty and students.
Columbia's president defended her institution against accusations of anti-Semitism, but last night hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters formed a Gaza solidarity encampment on campus.
They started having these mass protests, marching around the lawns, chanting what many would consider to be anti-Semitic chants, such as Intifada, such as From the River to the Sea, we don't want no two states, we want all of it, things like that.
Jonas Du is editor of Columbia's student-run newspaper. A 911 outage is over with out west. For 2 hours last night, emergency calls were stymied in four states: Texas, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Nevada. Retired Vegas undersheriff Chris Darcy.
From the technological standpoint, you'll be able to determine what happened and what went wrong pretty rapidly. Now, if there's nefarious actors or bad actors involved, that investigation could take a little bit longer.
Officials are unclear about what went wrong. Texas police blame a major malfunction with a cell phone carrier. The New York State Capitol was hit by a cyber attack yesterday, just as lawmakers were rushing to finalize a state budget. The system that drafts bills was down for most of Wednesday. It's not clear who launched the attack or what data might have been compromised. Opening statements in the hush money trial of former President Trump could get underway as soon as next week. RNC co-chair and Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura, says the trial is a ploy to politically assassinate the former president.
Alvin Bragg himself refused to prosecute this case until when? Until Donald Trump decided he was running for president. We can all see exactly what this is about and what the goal of this is. Of course, it's to keep Donald Trump from the campaign trail. They want him sitting in a courtroom.
Trump's required to attend every day of the trial, which is expected to run through June. The ex-president plans to make campaign stops in New York, like he did in Harlem earlier this week. Victor Davis Hanson with the Hoover Institution thinks that could work in his favor.
He's redefining the Republican Party and maybe America as a party of middle-class people. As class starts to substitute race, people are identifying more in common with their economic status than they are with their tribal affiliations. So those people you saw in Harlem are saying, I have more in common with your agenda than I do with Oprah.
Trump hobnobbed with bodega owners on the streets of Harlem on Tuesday. Senate Democrats have squashed the impeachment trial of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
On this vote, the yeas are 51. The nays are 48, and the article falls.
Too bad, says House Speaker Mike Johnson, who charges Mayorkas with high crimes and misdemeanors when it comes to the ongoing border crisis.
He's probably the least effective and I think most dangerous in terms of his policy implementations of any cabinet secretary in the history of the United States.
Johnson set up a vote for Saturday in the House on separate bills that send billions more in aid to both Ukraine and Israel. That vote has put the speaker's leadership role on shaky ground with hardcore conservatives. Here's Capitol Hill correspondent Scott McFarland.
The House Speaker is trying to thread a political needle here. He's released a package that gives $61 billion to Ukraine, billions more to Israel, but has separate votes, which could help him navigate his very narrow majority and get both parties to support it when some Republicans oppose more taxpayer money to Ukraine. But this doesn't end the trouble for Mike Johnson, who has some Republicans seeking to oust him, saying he's cutting too many deals with Democrats.
Scott McFarland on the Hill today. And Caitlin Clark is about to cash in with a new sports endorsement. College basketball's all-time leading scorer will ink a deal with Nike that's worth eight figures. If you do the math, that's more than $10 million. The former Iowa Hawkeye sharpshooter was the top pick in this week's WNBA draft. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life.
This is Faith Under Fire, listening to voices from religious battlegrounds in our region and across the nation. I'm Greg Gillespie, and today a return visit from Ariel Del Turco. She works with the Family Research Council and coordinated their study of hostile actions and threats against Christian groups and facilities. Ariel, before we get into new topics about what these statistics mean, let's briefly recap the trends that your study found.
Our numbers most recently from last year in 2023, we identified 436 acts of hostility against churches, and that was more than double the previous year, which only had 195 incidents. So we're seeing a sharp increase in recent years, and we think that's very concerning for anyone who cares about religious freedom. This is actually an issue that can unify churches along denominations, across the political spectrum. All Christians and all people of faith should be able to say that it's totally unacceptable for these crimes to be occurring against Christians and against churches. We don't want any religious community to feel that they are being targeted in their community, that they are under threat, that their church is unwanted. This is something that I think all religious adherents can agree on.
Okay, there's some in popular conversation that, oh, these Christians are dangerous and these Christians are taking away rights and all that. But at the same time, it's not the Christians who are firebombing and taking guns into places. The Christians are the victims of the incidents that your research has analyzed.
That's a good point. And I think some of the political discourse, particularly around the Christian faith right now, is very dangerous. We see the news media repeatedly going after something that they call Christian nationalism. But really, if you dig down, what they mean by Christian nationalism is just conservative Christians, right? If you're pro-life, if you think that your rights come from God and not government, there are certain people in the media that are going to paint you as an extremist, as a Christian nationalist. And I think that's very unhelpful when we're living in a culture that is increasingly secular, doesn't understand religion, and views religion as more and more of a threat, and therefore as something that maybe even deserves to be targeted in your community.
Let's have some positive advice for people who are on a local church board or a pastor or an elder hearing all this big issue of how violence and hostility against churches has doubled in the last year. That's scary. Do you have some positive advice for how to keep your people safe and how to speak out about the injustice of this?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about this issue is that it's not primarily a policy issue. Thankfully, we already do have laws on the books that protect churches from violence. This is already illegal. We see this more as a cultural issue. that means we can participate in the solution. We can all be a part of shaping the communities that we live in. I always encourage people to take very simple steps to foster cultural support for religious freedom. And we can do that simply by living out our faith in the public square and not being shy to share our beliefs or to pray in public or to let people at your secular corporation know that you go to church. Let them know why in a respectful way. Living out your faith in the public square is going to go a long way in the long term towards building a culture that understands religion, that respects people's different religious beliefs, and ultimately one that affirms everyone's right to religious freedom.
Ariel, you created an online version of this report. Where can people find that report, and what will they find when they get that either forwarded or printed out to talk at their local congregation?
Yeah, so you can access the report at frc.org/hostility against churches, and you're going to see a brief analysis of the problem, and then we actually have a summary of every single incident that is tracked. So there's a lot there, but you can search for your state and see what's been happening and share it with people. I think a lot of people don't know about this trend, but they would care. It's important for us to understand what's happening.
Ariel Del Turco of the Family Research Council. Some of those have happened in our listening area in Pennsylvania and New York, but the disturbing trend that I hear from that, 900 in the last 6 years, almost half of those have just been in the past year since January 2023.
Unbelievable. Thank you very much, Greg. The name of the program, Faith Under Fire, comes your way Thursdays during the Noon Report or online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Thunderstorms that struck parts of western Pennsylvania last evening faded to showers overnight, and today only a few scattered showers remain. Another front, though, will reignite showers late tonight and tomorrow. Its passage will spell cooler air arriving for the weekend. For this afternoon, clouds, some sunny breaks, and a shower here and there. High temperatures mid-50s to the mid-60s. Tonight, some patchy clouds, low temps 40s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, showers return during the day. High temperatures mid-50s to mid-60s. Cooler Saturday, clouds, some sunshine, a light shower, and high temperatures mostly in the 50s.
All right, Kevin, fine work at the Weather Center as always. And finally at noon, put your hands in the air like you just don't care, because today is not a day for handshakes.
Today is National High Five Day, a hand gesture of slapping palms. Magic Johnson says he invented the high five at Michigan State in the late 70s, but the women's volleyball circuit did it in the 60s. It even has claims from World War II veterans. It's a great way to greet each other or offer congratulations because it's friendly. The CDC says it also has fewer germs than a handshake. So up top. I'm Bree Tennis.
All right, up top, never stop. Thank you, Bree, and that's the world we live in. Thursday, April 18th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Family Life News podcast. If you've been encouraged by what you've heard, please share it with others and click the subscribe button to automatically receive future episodes. Family Life is a listener-supported ministry. Podcasts like this are made possible by your financial partnership. Find out more at familylife.org.